Thank you for joining me for another edition of On Point. And today I'm joined by some salubrious guests from the NatWest team, Paul Tilley, the Area Workplace Manager, and Adam Furkettle, who is the Senior Facilities Manager. Thanks, guys, for joining. I know it's a busy time of year, Christmas, so carving some time out is really difficult. But I thought it was an important time to me and just sort of reflect on the great work we've done together on a very challenging project on an iconic building. I love this building. I've been here for years, and I know you guys have as well. So what are some of the highlights of the year, just as a quick preamble in?
I think for me it's the seeing the team work together. We've had a lot of challenges this year, and new ways of working has kind of overcome those, and new technology. And I think the direction we're going, technology is a big play in the future.
I think for me, it's the change in how we work together as a team, how we are trying to be quite strategic with regards to our investment. We've got a building that's 20 years plus. So I think one of the key wins for us this year is the collaboration between NatWest Projects and Glass Aftercare with regards to how we sensibly look at investment opportunity for the building and focusing that investment for the right reasons to ensure that our buildings wind and watertight. When you have buildings of a particular age, you need to look after, you've got to care for them, etc. And I think the facade of buildings often gets overlooked. It's often more the internal plant that gets the focus. So that for me has been a real success this year is the collaboration between us as businesses and what we've actually achieved, and almost coming to the end of the project now with regards to our investment repairs program for the building has been a great achievement.
I think so. Thank you for saying those kind words. I mean, it was, I know when we first started, it's difficult to envisage what we were going to do together, because we both looked at the building and said, okay, how can we capture it? So we both adopted, and I think you were quite proactive, you and you know, your team, and Matt and Dave were all looking at it and saying, okay, well, how can we set a benchmark so we can look after this? Because, you know, it's a building that you own now. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge investment. And I think when we looked at it, we thought, okay, well, let's use drones. So we've, you know, to recap, we've used drones here, we've used LiDAR technology so you can walk through, and we've tagged and meta-tagged that's all geospatially, as well as a hybrid. So it's not just visually looking at it from cameras, it's actually the guys on the cradles, on the mupes, on the ropes, who have actually touched the metal. So we looked at that. I know when we sat down, we said, you know, risk was different stakeholders and different things. I think some people wanted risk, some people wanted the efficiency and the carbon reduction and the energy savings. Some people wanted it aesthetically just to improve it. And of course, weather tightness was key. So I think what we started with was a benchmark with then built on top. And then we actually presented, a scope and a budget for you guys to consider. And how difficult was that, or how easy was that perhaps, when you had that initial survey which had all of that technology embedded? Did it make it easier?
Yeah, I think what made it really useful is the fact of the technology that's actually being used. And I think I had a conversation with you that right at the very beginning, I didn't just want it to be a drone survey. Yeah. I wanted to actually do that physicality had to be part of what we were doing as well to ensure that we're checking things. We're not just doing the drone overview of the building. So I think that whole hybrid way of carrying out the survey was key for us. And then that gave us the confidence and the comfort of that the information that was coming back enabled us to effectively triage what we needed to do now, and what we potentially need to do in the future. And then that drives the whole investment strategy for the building itself. And I think as well, by adopting the risk-based approach as well, which is what we did, we wanted to know on the back of the survey, what do we need to do now? You know, and I think we obviously worked with Glass Aftercare and ISS, and really kind of almost adapted like a bit of an electrical testing approach with regards to the actual condition report itself, because that then enables us as NatWest to then take it up the line to do that risk review with our stakeholders to get that buy-in, and that's secured our significant investment with regards to the remedial works that we needed to do. But I think by nature of the fact of how the survey was completed, it enabled us to articulate the risk, to articulate the benefits, to articulate the timelines. So it was quite easy to it's almost like, well, that's a no-brainer, you need to do that. And that's where we want to go to, because otherwise, what happens when you have this type of very complex report that was actually done, and that's for the right reasons, and what you want to be able to do is kind of extract those key messages to get the decision in place that you need to do now. Because I guess from an operational perspective, we need to make sure that this building works, we haven't got leaks all over the place, we haven't got things that are about to fall off, etc. And what we need to ensure is that we can do that in tandem with the overall strategic review of the building, so that we're not waiting 2 years to do like a full assessment of all of the information that comes back on the back of the reports to get an investment package and business case developed, etc. It was like, no, let's do all the stuff that we need to do now, let's get that across the line, but in tandem with that, let's develop the whole strategic approach as well, which is what we're currently doing.
I think one of the things I've seen is the report enabled us to start building that capital investment plan. Paul was quite instrumental in coming up with a 5-year capital investment plan, which isn't really something I've seen before here. So this is a new thing that we've got going forward, and I think that's really going to help the company just plan how we're going to manage our buildings and look after them.
I think it enables you also to focus on where you're going to have those peaks and troughs with regards to your investment, but also any impact on operations within the building as well. Obviously, it's head office for NatWest, very busy building, as you said, Rod, quite iconic. You know, we're central to Bishopsgate. There's a lot of through traffic through this building, so we need to almost like sort of identify when the big ticket items, like say for example, if we did replace the glazing, that's gonna be massively impactful for us as a business. And what we wanna do is not be reactive in that year, we wanna be able to plan that in advance. So hence the whole development of the 5-year capital plan. But what just coming back to my original point, I think one of the key wins out of what we've done this year, working with Glass Aftercare, it's the presentation of the information. It's that 3D rendering of all of that information that the drones have captured on the exterior of the building, but also the internal condition as well. And that total walkthrough, I think we mentioned it before, you know, we've used technology that estate agents often use when they're used to like buy a house, etc. And that's been seen by NatWest as a real powerful tool with regards to ensuring that when you do that virtual walkthrough of the building, you get the different assets that have got like challenges and issues, etc., and you can just tap on them and you get the history behind it and everything. And it just enables you to have a different, more effective way of like gathering that information, but also quite importantly, keeping that information up to date as well.
I think the FIM system that we sort of developed here, Facade Information Management System, is a disruptor. You know, I think visual O&Ms, we know, when we first started probably 10, 15 years ago here, it was go into the basement, pull out big, you know, AO drawings, and then they get diminished, they break down and everything. So trying to sort of repair and maintain this and get that history, the accountability and interoperability is just completely gone. What we've got now, I strongly believe, is we have a system that's interoperable. We've got something that's accountable. So I know, you know, we've re-gasketed 4,000 bits of glass here. Mm-hmm. So, and I can tell you on any day who did the gasketing, what they found, how they did it. We've got evidence. Mm-hmm. So in terms of being able to have full accountability with a client, the FIM system is like second to none. Mm-hmm. But secondly, any information that we get is in a system that you can understand. So, okay, let me look at this is very facade centric, obviously, yeah. But there's no reason that you couldn't layer in whatever centric you want it, if you want to look at a M&E or whatever you could put into it. But you know, for what we've done here, I think in one place, at one point of pain, you can just go in really quickly to do that. What's the, you know, if you were advising other PMs or people that look after this type of thing, is there something that you would like more of? Would you do something differently or when you're tackling a building like this?
I think having that report, what I would like to see going forward is, now that we've got this visual model of the building, is how we can use that in our planning of other works, and also my engagement with people within the building. I can give them this model and show, look, we want to do works between here and there, and this is going to affect this part of the building. That's a really powerful tool that I've now got that I can share with colleagues, and I think that's really going to help my role. So I think what I would say to other FMs and building managers looking at potentially doing this, you're going to get a good tool off the back of it.
Yeah. I think as well, and it's been, I think it's been a journey for all of us, that, you know, and we've kind of tried some things which, you know, have worked really well, and we've tried some other things that we've needed to adapt. And I think what's great about the process that we've gone through is that we've been on that journey together.
Yeah.
And now we've got a system in place that, as Adam said, we could actually build upon. So it might not just be for the condition of the glazing, interior, exterior, etc. Is there the capacity there to like add other assets on it, etc.? So it's almost like you've got a virtual R&M right there, which would be such a powerful tool for an FM to be able to use, because to your point, Rod, everyone's got one of those rooms in the building that are just filled with R&M manuals.
Yeah.
And it's quite an archaic way of dealing with that. And I appreciate, obviously, you've got online R&M systems, etc. But I think the beauty about what we've done is it's the actual visibility of the all of the different elements of the building, and enabling that real-time information update as to, you know, what's the condition of that pane of glass, when was that repaired, who put that gasket in, etc. And that's, I think it's got the potential of really being expanded here, and that's maybe something that we'll look to do in the future.
In terms of health and safety, what I found, and certainly on this, is when we start layering, if someone does a task which is risky, so we did the 8th floor glass change, if you remember, and you couldn't get, it was difficult because the BMUs made it difficult to use the cradles. We had to abseil, but you still had a, you know, a 200, 300 kilo piece of glass that had to be managed, which was offset, so the mupes couldn't actually touch it. So we built a piece of specialist kit, which then was a rig off the roof, and we used the cradle rails in the end. So there's a lot of thought had to go into that, and probably took 3-4 weeks of different people, and Overbury were involved, the health and safety, and the bank's health and safety. Now, next time we do that, it's like that. That's how we do it. Here's the risk plan, here's the methodology, here's the pictorial versions, because people get very, rightly so, concerned about risk and how things are going. But if you can show an evidential, look, this is how we put it together, this is how it was on the roof, this is the guys doing the work, everyone goes, right? They relax a little bit. They still read the stuff. They still have to consider, is it exactly the same? And it usually is. So layering the information into somewhere where you can see it at the point, so you can actually go to the model now, which was captured, in answer to your question, that's how the drone technology works. It's sort of like Google on steroids. So you could use Google, and I'm sure Google will get better and better, and I know there are plans that the way that they get their meshing network, it will become super clear. But currently, the double benefit of the point cloud that the drones capture is it's millimeter perfect. And you could actually design a whole new building now and remodel it based on the point cloud that you've got. Now, me and you might not use it on a daily basis. And that's why we moved to the Matterport model inside, because you could walk around it, and I tagged everything from inside out. So from the comfort of this desk, I could tell you what all those offices look like now. Yeah. So if we want to say, actually, you know what, if you had a designer working with us and said, I'd like to change all the colour scheme to red, yeah, he could do that really quickly and go, this is what it would look like that. From a health and safety point of view, you could actually say, you know, to different contractors, don't go in that room. You can't switch, you know, like you, some of the challenges that you've had over time, you can say, like, these are the, you could mark up the visual, so you can actually visual. You can invite them into, you know, like a Zoom, but actually invite them into the room now. So you could hold a Zoom in the model. So rather than, you know, like the way we do Zooms, if you do it in the model, everyone's looking at the same thing. So when you point to there, they're all looking at the room as though you're here. But, you know, we haven't, there's so much we haven't explored or shown yet, the power for that. So, and I think that's, we use it for training. So from the guys that come here, we go like, this is what you're going to be working on. This is, these are the areas, and it just speeds up, and they get connected to it. And these are the traps. So we've already learned, as you said, you know, we've both gone on a journey. So we've had people trained on different parts of equipment, and they haven't got it. And so we've gone right. Okay, we're going to adopt. This is where you're going. These are the risks. This is what you need to consider. This is how the others have done it. Do you understand? Tick. You know, and it's a sort of like a toolbox talk visual that I think is that will and should get adopted as an industry standard.
I think things like that would be brilliant for. You understand the customer journey, if because we're doing some works in our reception. So imagine if we're in a Zoom call and you can see the end state reception. It would really help you understand, like, customers will come through here, they'll talk to the concierge there. It'd just be a really good way of
for training. It's definitely, and this is what we found with Matterport. We pushed that thing, and I did a couple of seminars with them where they had, and people were going, oh wow, we thought it was just this. I didn't realise you could do this, and they're bringing more. I mean, the latest feature is, so a lot of people think you know, you might have stuff on the wall or you might have a paper. Now I can literally switch that off and it will be a blank room. So it removes all the furniture, all the paintings, all the everything.
It's almost like three-dimensional CAD when you're just switching off the layers, etc.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. So yeah, I think I'm keen to sort of like push the FIMS thing, because I think it's been a huge success so far. Number one, it's physically replenished the building. Yeah, so I think we've stopped any potential water ingress. I would like to hear Matt's view on how much energy we have saved just by, you know, any drafts and winter things that you really affect a building at this time. Because we are, you know, we have got like a poly crisis. Yeah, so every time they put a new building up, it's a new tornado that's developing around this building or any building. You know, then you've got, you know, we've got climate change and everything else that's going on. So there are things that we don't even know about, but we're trying to manage them from inside. And every day is a new school day. I think if we adopt a system like FIMS, and it's, you know, and I think it's more of philosophy. It's not just about us having the FIMS system. I think everyone's saying, look, facade information management system, however you do it, let's think about the skin of the building, because, you know, you wouldn't go out into the sun without putting any cream on. You know, you think about your body and you put a coat on, and the glass and the facade is doing exactly that. You know, it's protecting everything internally, all the people, all the inhabitants, all the M&E, all the electricity that's going on. So I, you know, number one, I think the whole team, NatWest and the whole team, to do this piece of work is, I only know two or three, and they're on a massive scale that have even entertained, like Buckingham Palace have started doing this type of thing. And I've seen the level of detail, so I've learnt from some of the stuff that they've done and brought it into this building so it could work better. I'm always curious, how could we do better? You know, what does the building look like for you? You know, or what would you expect from a FIM system, you know, next year or even now? And then that helps us learn. You know, that makes us a partner of choice for the next 5 years.
I think in my mind, and one of the things that we need to explore is, like, we have our own building systems here that we use to store information about the building. It would be great to kind of have that crossover that the FIM system is linked in with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you haven't got like these separate network systems, etc., that are right, on different platforms, etc. You go to one kind of golden source, you can click on there, you can see all of the building information, etc. And then you click on site else and it pulls this information through. One of the other things which I've just thought of as you were talking as well, I think one of the benefits of having this type of reporting and this type of, I'd call it dynamic reporting as well, is it enables you to see things quite clearly that you wouldn't normally be able to see. So not only from the fact that you're able to get that viewpoint of different areas of the building that, you know, that are level 10, etc., but also from an energy efficiency perspective as well, the thermal imaging views that we had on the back of this survey really kind of drove that different kind of overview as to how the building is operating and where we do have weak points and, you know, where we do have investment opportunities, etc. It just drives that intelligent investment oversight with regards to what do we need to do, because there isn't an endless pot of money that we can just reglaze the building. What we need to do is we need to drive that decision making using data, using the information that we've got from the survey report that enables us to be able to like steer what the right routes are with regards to what we do need to invest in and how we improve the building. But it gets us to a certain point, and then, as I said, we've got that 5-year capital investment plan on the background as well that is still being developed as well. So I think the beauty of this type of surveying and data capture is it's easily digestible. Because it's very visual, and everybody can see the same information as well. And I think it's very user-friendly as well.
Yeah.
Rather than having some technical report that you'd have to, you know, talk through, etc., it just provides you with the information that is, as I said, very visual, so you can see it. It's like, oh, we're losing loads of heat from this row, you know, of windows because, you know, we've got these structural issues with regards to, you know, how the glass is actually operating in itself, and that enables us to then drive that decision making as to what we need to do to address that.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because having that relationship back to a building with the thermals, and you said, I think the opportunities for change and improvement are, when we first looked at it, we thought, okay, well, like, is it a case of you're looking at a strategy to replace all the glass? Where actually now you can go, well, we can just, that elevation is taking all the beating of the sun and the winter. Let's focus on that, and that could be a year one thing. And the other thing is you've got technology moving forward, so opportunities for solar, clear solar. You've got heated glass opportunities. You've got, you know, different solar or sun shading. And the glasses that have moved on with their U values getting below one are going to tick a lot of, you know, because everyone's been talking about EPCs, you know, and how do we go from like the average of the city is a C and a D, and how do we get down to a B? And I think, I know you guys have always been focused on like how do we improve that, which is really good. So I second what you said there. I think that was an important point. Mm.
I think the solar film has been a big win for us. We've done solar film up on level 9, and that's made a big difference to the temperature up there. There's considerations about how much light does that stop coming in. Is that something that you could reflect in the model to show lighting changes?
Yeah. I mean, that. I know when we did that roof, that was a big thing. We sampled about 5 or 6 different samples, because there's a balance between how much light you let in, because there is a proven mood change that happens the more light you get in. So you don't want to block too much out, and there's a comfort level obviously of temperature, so how much heat gain and everything. So that could be, we used a very complex model. So I worked with a Brazilian firm, software firm, and we sampled on this, for instance, 4,000 bits of glass. to get back to. So the original glass was a KM155, which is superb. And even if it was available today, it proved that it was the right glass for this building because of the orientation. So now we were looking at what's the next best thing. So we looked at not just film, and you're right, when we did change the film, you were seeing a 5 degree temperature improvement to manage the M&E, which is amazing. And I think film is probably not utilised enough in solar or, you know, blast or whatever in the city. But the modelling for sure could be, I mean, now you've got something, you can just build. You can build sensors, you can be at IoT. I'd love to have the discussion with your BMS people and say, like, how do we knit this together so you've got something really useful? Because I think the way that AR, VR, I mean, we've been trialling glasses. So I've got a building in London, which is very high, very tall, and it can only be abseiled or cradled. However, the signal is really poor. So I'm in the, and we sort of highlighted that. So I'm in the basement. The guys are just wearing glasses that are enabled on 2G. So I can get them signal and information. So they could see, so they're hands-free, which you need to be for an abseiler or if you're working on a cradle, so that you can actually do the work, but you can actually pull up like heads-up display, O&M information, or anything that we want to send them, and gesture control, you know, they could do that and send me video or imagery down in the basement so I could pull out the right information. So actually, so we're almost doing like, because it is a bit like open heart surgery. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're changing or doing improvements on a building, you're opening up the skin, doing the work, and then you've got to put it back. And, you know, so there is tech that we can, you know, keep layering on, depends on the appetite. You know, as you said, not everyone's got a budget or even the foresight really to say, okay, well, let's do something new. You know, let's do something new and bring everyone on the journey, because it, you know, transition and tech change and everything is a bit scary, I know.
Of course.
Thank you both for your time. I really appreciate the insight and that it has been of value. And obviously it's a relationship that we'll keep on talking, and I know you're keen on tech. Yeah. I'd love to show you some more of that as we hand over the project, and again with ISS, I just think it will be a really good partner for them to assist and work with you. So that's it for this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got some insight. And if you're a property manager in London, take heed. Tech's coming.